Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Level Up Human, the comedy science podcast, souping up the Homo sapien.
Hello, welcome to Level Up Human Extra with Rachel Wheely and Simon Watt. Hello, Simon.
Hello, I am currently sat down in my kitchen, rather excited. This is sort of a new format for us, I suppose. We did a Level Up Human Extra in the past, but we were kind of debating news stories a bit more. We had brought long ones each, but now we're being a bit more fast, reactive, and trying to respond. So where are you right now, Rich?
I'm at home. I'm just sitting in my kitchen. Where are you?
With all of your excellent recording equipment's conveniently far away from me in my kitchen, where I'm sitting with a cup of tea and a copy of The Guardian in front of me.
Nice. And we've got a story that we wanted to bring you, the headline of which is Scientists Use Stem Cells from Frogs to Build First Living Robots.
Yes, and is that not the best thing ever already? Is Terminator not that bit better?
Absolutely. Living robots made of African clawed frog stem cells.
Yeah, so the African clawed frog is a really, really cool frog. It's kind of the biologist's go-to animal. Like, I know we all love fruit flies and we all love mice and rats. And there's a kind of plant called Arabidopsis. They are the kind of main models. But the other one is the African clawed frog. It was originally used as sort of like a test for pregnancy. If you added the urine of a pregnant woman, then within a day, this frog would lay its frog spawn. And as a result, it spread all over the world. And biologists have been using it ever since. It was one of the first vertebrates sent to space, I think. I think it was the first vertebrate cloned. Incredible thing, and now they're making machines out of them.
Yeah, which is incredible. I didn't expect the first sort of xenobots, as they're called, to be made out of organic matter, but they are. Can you tell us what a xenobot is?
So xeno is kind of a Greekish word meaning other or stranger or something. If you like the Alien films, you know they're xenomorphs, so other types, I suppose, if you translate that roughly. And if you think of like xenotransplantation, which we've covered a lot in the podcast, it means just transplantation from an other being. But the reason why I care about this is because this is biology nanobots, right? And that's just one in the eye for the physicists and the chemists, which is the only reason I do biology in the first place.
To get one in the eye for the physicists and the chemists.
Yeah, but it is a genuine, really cool thing, because the whole point of nanobots is they are nano, they're tiny, they're able to go off and do jobs. And nanotechnology is one of those things a bit like, I don't know, maybe nuclear fusion, which has always seemed to be just around the corner and we haven't been hitting it. But doing it with biology makes so much more sense.
Yeah, I mean, apart from anything else, these xenobots can just sort of fall apart when they finish doing the task they've been programmed to do, which is presumably better for the environment.
Well, I suppose not just better from the environment. It depends what you think the environment is. For half these things, we're wanting to send them into us. So you want things that can break down and be disposed of. Like, you don't want little bits of, I don't know, the sort of heavy metals or plastic and things perhaps looking around inside your bloodstream. So they've got two advantages for virtue of being biological like this, is that one, they can heal, perhaps, which can be useful, so they can keep on doing their jobs, but also they can break down and just disappear, hopefully anyway.
And they're less than a millimetre long.
Yeah, so far, I guess. And we could say that they can be perhaps scale this kind of thing up. They've been making these out of cells, like skin cells and heart cells. The heart cell is the important one because it can kind of jerk around. It's a muscle cell of a kind, and therefore having muscle allows it to move. But they've been able to sort of configure them using these things called evolutionary algorithms. It's sort of like designing the robot using the machine and helping the machines design things themselves. But it means it can carry payloads, and that's important for perhaps doing things like unclogging arteries or trying to deliver radioactive materials to cancer cells. It's a way of kind of even marking things up for our scanners.
Yeah. So because the point is that because they're heart cells, they spontaneously contract and relax. So it's like having something which has its own engine.
Yeah, I guess the point of this being spontaneous, as you say, like heart cell, rather than sort of the muscle cells that we might find in our biceps and our triceps and our amazing pecs, is that they beat. But it does it themselves. Like if you take a heart out of a body, it will keep pumping until it dies.
And
it has its own pacemaker.
These cells have enough fuel for them to survive for between a week and 10 days without consuming anything, because they don't have stomachs or any other organs. They're just like a collection of cells with no brain and no anything. So they, I guess they get programmed to do their job and then they just keel over.
Well, this was so far, again. The thing is, we might be able to make them a little bit more responsive. You need something akin to a bit like a nervous system if you're going to have the use of the complex senses. But even with this, you can perhaps have things moving along like a kind of gradient of hormones or something like that. I don't quite know how they're directing them. That'll be the real next step. They've got them moving around and doing useful things. Now, if they can direct that usefulness, basically, if they can apply it themselves, it's like every careers counsellor I've ever spoken to said to me.
I don't really understand how this works, though, right? So they've used this algorithm to come up with 100 different generations of these Xenobots. So before they've actually made one in the lab, they've already gone through multiple sort of evolutionary stages.
Yeah, they're trying to sort of outsource trial and error to machines. And in particular, this is really useful when you think of sort of 3D design, which this is. It's trying to sculpt cells between 500 and 1,000 of them into a kind of a 3D shape, which is useful, which is capable of moving, which is capable of carrying stuff.
Mm.
And basically, the supercomputer comes out with all the ones that don't work and then shows you the ones that do.
Mm. And then you build those ones in the lab, so you're not wasting time building the ones that aren't going to work.
Yeah, this has happened before, actually. So we are getting a bit more and more towards sort of like synthetic organisms. There have been examples in the past where people have sort of redesigned genes and even redesigned some proteins and enzymes, which are now better than life. Like, I'm an evolutionary biologist. I love evolution. I think it's incredible. But we have to remember that it only does the least bad version, right? Evolution is only coming up with... it's dealing with the historical legacy. All the mistakes that we've made in the past are kind of carried through. So we are riddled with errors. And so if you're going to have a design approach, you might be able to look at that as something which works, but you can still perfect it and make it better. This is perhaps trying something similar.
Hmm. So we've got these super, super simple organisms at the moment that they've made, but they hope that they might be able to build bigger ones with... blood vessels and nervous systems and sensory cells and rudimentary eyes.
Yeah, the question might become why, I suppose. Like, one of the reasons why them even being small and tiny is fantastic is for the exact same reason why nanobots would be small and fantastic. You want a lot of these things sort of working at the scale of the human or the microbe, where they can go and do a lot of cool work in weird places like soil. Like, one of the applications people have talked about this kind of future technology is sending these into areas with... like radioactive dust, so they can perhaps carry it off and accumulate in some place without any humans having to do that dirty work. Small is beautiful, as I'm sure you know, my tiny podcasting friend.
Well, I've always been saying this. I'm glad somebody's acknowledging it at last. So we could have an army of Xenobots removing radioactive waste for us and things like that.
Yeah, but when you call them an army of bots, it does sound more and more Schwarzenegger-esque. You know, this is going to go full Terminator.
Now... the other thing we need to discuss is, what are our ethical responsibilities towards these new creatures that we're making?
That's tricky, because we are designing something a bit akin to life. I suppose while it can't replicate, people don't really care that much. And if we're really, really blunt, if it's small and tiny, people don't tend to notice. you know, it's the same way that we tend to care about the pretty animals and not the ugly ones, the same way we tend to care about, but scale. We care about things that are big enough to notice. You pretty much need no ethical approval to do any studies on insects whatsoever. So this isn't life yet. If it could self-replicate, that's getting a little bit more tricky. And we have to consider why we might want that kind of thing. If it's got a nervous system, then you're approaching something which might have a capacity to feel some kind of pain. If you had a complex nervous system, you're getting into kind of existential angst, the kind of human pain, where you're aware of your pain, which is the worst kind of thing.
Well, we all know that, yeah. Okay, so so basically, because it's very tiny, we don't really care about it.
Yeah, I suppose I'm saying people at large don't care. Biologists do. You do have to go through the sort of ethical approval for these things. These guys will have gone through, I don't know how much paperwork. I can feel their existential pain about that. It's not bad yet. It's not something to automatically fear. It can only do good if we've got good applications for it. But anytime you're creating something which amounts to artificial life, it's worthwhile taking a moment, stopping, thinking, and thinking, how do we do this right? And how do we prepare these kind of ethical debates for the future? Mm. It's not an issue yet, but it will be.
But it's a step forward for actually being able to control how something grows and how it works, presumably.
Yeah, and so the application is probably the bit that matters. This could well stop at the sort of human body scale, where we've got something we can send in to do some work, or maybe send in to sites. But the same way people will be worried about things like, say, one of the genuine concerns of some forms of GM crops is cross-pollination. If there was some way of, like, I don't know, a bacteria or a virus gathering some of this information, could it spread into the wild? It doesn't look like that so far, but again, who knows what's down the line. Can we add the fact that they're cute?
Yes, of course.
I mean, like, look at it, like, it's worthwhile. And anybody out there who's listening, seriously, go Google this, have a little watch of this beautiful little blob just wandering along. It'll make you think it's got a personality. If you like tardigrades, this is kind of the same kind of level of cute.
I knew we'd get around to tardigrades eventually. Do we classify this as a living creature?
Yeah,
or
it's a
machine.
It's a bit of a creature at the very best, or, you know, at the very worst, depending how you define it. It's a machine. It's a machine made up of biological bits.
Nice. Okay. In other news, a team of Japanese scientists have managed to recreate an archaea, which is very, very difficult to do.
Yes, I suppose that the question is, what is archaea is? Recreating anything that's living is really, really tough. And actually, when you say recreating, it's more that they've been able to kind of find a thing in deep sea mud, which looks perhaps like one of our early ancestors. It's not our early ancestor in the same way that we're not descended from monkeys. We have a common ancestor with them. But what we're looking at here is kind of getting a further understanding at the very point when we became complicated cells. Does this make sense? Are you with me so far?
Well, I've done a bit of research on this, right, as a non-scientist, and I've managed to summarise what happened. So the Earth is 4.5 billion years old. And for the first two...
According
to scientists. So, I mean, who knows whether we're going to trust them. But for the first 2 billion years, nothing much happened. And then there was bacteria and there was archaea, right?
Yeah, so for a long time, we didn't even know that these were different kingdoms, is kind of what we'd call them. They're basically the two different versions of the really complicated stuff. The cool places we say archaea nowadays are mostly in extremophiles. They're living in those, like, boiling lakes and those acid swamps and the deep, deep, deep sea where there's next to no oxygen. But they're also a bit everywhere. But the places where we really notice them are where they're surviving, where nothing else can.
And then at some point, they sort of joined together to create a new type of cell, and those are called eukaryotes. Am I pronouncing that right?
Eukaryotes.
Eukaryotes. Eukaryotes. And that's your first sophisticated cell right there.
Yeah, so what we're looking at is kind of the world's best supergroup. You know, it's like Crosby, Stills, and Nash, or, I don't know, the Changing Ross to the Sugar Babes, to be a bit more... Even that's not contemporary now, is it? Jeez.
No. Sugar Babes is like a 20-year-old reference. There must be supergroups.
Or Pussycat Dolls. I don't know who's still going and has a changing roster.
Look, Simon, we've never tried to be hip or cool on this podcast. Let's not start now.
Okay, well what it really is that there was a time that pretty much something that was very good at, you know, metabolizing, that's using stuff and turning it into energy, came along and it teamed up with one of these archaea. So if you look into our own cells, we can see a sort of legacy of this beautiful mashup of this, like, Avengers, that's a team up. That's
right,
that's contemporary.
Okay, yeah. Now we're on a nerd level, everyone will be with us on.
Okay, in our own Avengers assembly, what's happened was one of these archaea came along, found a bacteria, and rather than going nom 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 nom, engulfing it and eating it up, it kept a fair bit of it round because it was able to use things like oxygen in a different kind of way. And if you look at our cells nowadays, one of the things we can find is our mitochondria, which are these little powerhouses of the cell, and they've got a double membrane around them, which is a legacy of this having been enveloped by the archaea. And we think even a fair few of our organelles, the bits inside our cells that do stuff, perhaps of a similar kind of origin, that we are all symbiotic. We're a coalition. Each one of our cells is made up of all these different bits which decided to work together. And that's pretty much what the eukaryotes are. It's where the archaea and the bacteria kind of teamed up together.
Right. So this is of particular importance because it's very difficult to do any research on archaea because you can't find them easily. And it's taken this team 12 years to dig this thing out of some mud.
Well, when we say can't find them, they're probably all over the place. They're hard to culture. So in the way that we can shove a bacteria into like a Petri dish, it doesn't seem to be you can do the exact same thing with archaea. I'm not hot on this. I have to say this was news to me whenever I started looking at it. I always assumed that they'd be just as simple, but it doesn't seem so.
Right. But for the first time, we've managed to culture an elusive species of archaea.
Yeah, and not everybody agrees on this is one of the interesting things. Not everybody thinks that this represents the sort of origins of the more complicated cell that we're seeing here. But many people think this sort of engulfing creates things like the mitochondria. Or if you look at some plant cells, the chloroplasts, the stuff which use sunlight to create food, kind of do something similar. We basically have a complicated architecture, a whole lot of scaffolding inside our cells that the bacteria and the archaea lack themselves.
So
it's weird.
We don't know exactly what the sort of prospect for this research is, like what it's going to help us to understand, or do we?
Yeah, well, there's another good analogy here, actually, because it says in this article, after several evolutionary steps, two organisms could have become one. So it's like the Spice Girls when two become one. That's contemporary enough, isn't it?
No, that's also still like an ancient reference. But it's fine.
They're coming back, Rachel. They're coming back.
Yeah, well, they are back, which is a good thing. It's I mean,
what do you mean it's a good thing? There are pop stars never die anymore. I think that's a
We don't trust any new pop stars. We have to go back to the old ones. Anyway, this isn't about pop stars.
Oh yeah, because the 80s pop stars, they were all completely fine and kosher.
Well, no, I'm not saying that.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay. Right. So that's two bits of proper news, and then and finally.
Yes.
Go on. You tell us your and finally story.
Diego the Sex Tortoise has retired.
Who is Diego the Sex Tortoise? Because I'm not aware of his work.
Well, you kind of should be. This guy is a sort of weird hero. You know the Galapagos tortoises, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so Darwin, when he went off to the Galapagos, and this is one of the places that helped shape the theory of evolution, he went and sat on a big, massive tortoise for a while. You might know of Lonesome George, who died a while back. He was the last of his kind. And pretty much all the Galapagos Islands have their own little kind of variation on the Galapagos giant tortoises. And on the island of Española, it seemed to be that this tortoise, this sort of subspecies or species, was on its way out. It was going to die out. But there was another tortoise called Diego, who was in San Diego Zoo in 1976, hence the name. And he was flown back to one of the nearby islands to try and mate with some of the females and hopefully bring this species back from the brink. And over 1,800 kids later, he's helped kind of...
What?
I don't know. Shag this species to safety, really.
1,800 kids?
Oh, not 1,800. 800. Sorry, 800. Did I say 1,800?
I thought you did.
Oh, that's still impressive, man.
I mean, 800 kids is loads as well, isn't it, really?
Yeah. He's also believed to be over 100. Like, nobody knows for certain. But this is like one rampant tortoise, which has done its bit for its species.
Yeah, it really has.
And now, well, as a reward, it is now being retired. It's gone back to the island and it's going to live out its day in peace.
That's nice. Oh, lovely. Good.
Oh, you really question, if you're such a horny tortoise, what does retirement actually look like for you?
Well, let's hope they've given him some companions for his retirement. Otherwise, he's going to get very bored. Good. What are we doing? Because we have some live dates coming up, don't we?
Yeah, I suppose this is a bit strange for us, isn't it? We've just finished a sort of residency at the Barbican in London, which has been fantastic because we got to record a whole ton of them kind of monthly for a while. Those will continue going out on the podcast, so look out for them. We've been to Microdot, that's out already. We've been to Blue Dot. We're going to be going back to Microdot, hopefully to Blue Dot. We're definitely going to Latitude. What else is coming up, Rich?
Well, specifically, if you're in Manchester, you can see us record at Microdot Festival on the 13th of February. And we're also going to the Edinburgh Science Festival on the 15th of April.
Fab. Anything else?
Birmingham Arts and Science Festival is coming up as well. We don't have a date for that yet, but we'll let you know. And you can also support the podcast, if you want to, on patreon.com/levelup human.
Yeah, and this is another one of those sort of slightly new takes that we're doing on the podcast. We know this isn't the Level Up Human podcast pure, but it's something a bit different. It means we're kind of also hungry for stories. So if you've got anything that you think we should be covering, get in touch. We're only having this chat, really, because it's something we thought was so exciting and you might want to hear about it.
You can send us a story on Twitter. We're at Level Up Human. Lovely. Well, I suppose we should say bye then, shouldn't we?
Bye.
Bye.
That was Level Up Human.
Hosted by Simon Watt, produced by Rachel Wheely, and supported by the Physiological Society. For more information, go to leveluphuman.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.